The text is from the Acts of the Apostles. And as they were gazing intently into the sky while he was going, then behold, two men in white clothing stood beside them. And they said, "Men of Galilee, why do you stand looking into the sky?" This is our text. Congregation may be seated. It is an awkward moment. The last in a long succession of amens has been spoken. The sign of the cross has been made. And the pastor has bent to share quiet, personal words of comfort with the family seated in the front row. The other mourners standing under the cemetery's portable awning and around it in the blazing sun shift restlessly but silently, unsure what to do next. They aren't familiar with the protocols surrounding committal services. And to everyone's great relief, the director, the professional who knows well every protocol, steps forward from his inconspicuous place to the side and clearly and authoritatively declares, "This concludes the graveside services." At last, the cue has been given. After a moment of reverent restraint, people move, conversations begin, gain confidence, and soon erupt in ordinary interactions and even subdued laughter. It's over. It's time to move on, time to get back to ordinary life. It must have been that way for the 11 as they stood there on the Mount of Olives with their necks bent backward, their eyes squinting and their heads spinning. Perhaps at first their heads had reverently bent down as Jesus raised his arms and declared his benediction, but they could not have helped looking up when Jesus' voice was suddenly coming from above them. And there, right before their eyes, on or in or with the cloud, Jesus kept ascending up, up into the sky. And the disciples kept staring, looking, straining, piercing the motionless space until it seemed to start swirling. Still, they kept on straining, staring, trying to fix in the exact spot where they had last seen him, and wondering, no doubt, what to do next. They weren't familiar with the protocols for an ascension. How long do you stand there? What's an appropriate amount of time before you say something? And what could you say anyway? Who would dare to break that sacred spiritual moment with a word or even a movement? And so they just kept standing and staring. And then somehow the 11 had become 13, a baker's dozen, all standing there, not moving, anchored in place. But the newcomers knew the protocol. They knew what to do. And with just a touch of chiding, shared their understanding with the stiff-necked disciples. It was time to stop staring. The disciples had seen enough. It was time to move on, time to get on with life. It would be easy enough, I suppose, to find an immediate connection for all of us gathered here in the middle of May, eagerly counting down the few remaining days until the end. Whether for you it's just the end of another school year that will soon ramp up again in another new beginning, all too soon, or maybe for you it's the end of your student years altogether. Either way, it is good to get to the end, good to get on with real life. It's a common assumption and often asserted as a wise axiomatic dictum. Life at the seminary is a fantasy experience, a time for detachment from the ordinary, a time to think carefully about spiritual truths, a time to dig deeply into texts, a time to gaze in wonder at long hidden truths, and to contemplate mysterious, confounding realities that blow your mind. You spend your years, we are told, according to the old adage, at the seminary in years of contemplation, with your head in the clouds and your eyes fixed on spiritual mysteries and heavenly marvels. And then, at last, it all comes to an end, and the time comes to turn your gaze earthward. Time to focus on the here and now. Time to deal with mundane realities. Time to get a job and earn some real money. Time to deal with a real congregation, with real people and real problems. Time to get on with life. It is, as I said, a tempting and easy application. In fact, it's too easy. It's simply cliche. The dictum is wrong. The real world is not just out there waiting for you to finish your time of contemplation. Reality is in here as well. All day, every day, real life intrudes into sacred spaces. Seminary or not, all the real problems that come with real life come here too. You know it. On the other hand, you also know that it's certainly not just those parked in a seminary who are tempted to lose touch with reality and obsess over ancient linguistic riddles, baffling historical quandaries, distant doctrinal disputes, wonders of homiletical rhetoric, lofty metaphysical mysteries, and dizzying heavenly dreams. Whether a seminary professor, a parish pastor, an accountant, a barista, a physician, a farmer, a sales clerk, homemaker, or student, we are all prone to it all the time. We are all inclined to obsess over some inconsequential patch of existence we can't quite see clearly enough. And so we continually stare and strain, trying to see, trying to understand, until the world around us and under us begins to swirl and spin into confusion. And this is the real point of application. It's not that we need to leave the sem and get on with real life. It's that we all must be careful not to fixate on the trivial and the insignificant and the irrelevant and ignore completely the things that do matter. Like staring into the sky, trying to find a point that has already vanished forever, it is far too easy for us to become consumed with things that do not finally matter. We need someone to come and tell us the obvious truth. This concludes the time for staring into heaven. And that's what God sent the angels to tell the 11. They had seen enough. It was time to stop staring and start speaking. And 10 days later, filled to overflowing with the promised Spirit, the disciples would do just that. They would start speaking. And they would never shut up. They were the witnesses. And so they kept telling people what they had seen. Mysteries and miracles and marvels and truths that blew their minds and that changed everything forever. The angels were not sending the disciples back into ordinary life. Ordinary life no longer existed. Jesus had been crucified and had risen. And now Jesus had ascended and was coming back again. Everything was changed forever. The disciples had seen all of this, and now they were to declare all of this. They were witnesses. That's the crystal clear message of Luke's account. Our text does not teach us to leave a life of contemplation for a life of service. We all know there's always some of both in any well-ordered life. And this text is not a call to be done with seminary theories and get busy with parish realities. That is at best an ignorant, foolish, and false distinction. No, the text provides the connection between witnessing with your eyes and meditating on marvels, and then witnessing with your life and speaking the truth and reality of those marvels to people around you today. The point of the story is that you must not lose your focus and perspective by staring too long into the heavens, too long into the trivialities. The point is not to try to discern where Jesus has been, but to know and declare where he now is. The two angels came to announce the conclusion and nudge the 11 toward the life that awaited them. The disciples were witnesses, not of a funeral and burial and life bitterly broken forever, but witnesses of a resurrection and ascension and life gloriously restored forever. The angels made it clear. The disciples had seen enough. They did not need to keep straining their eyes, racking their brains, staring into heaven at a spot where Jesus had been. They had already seen and grasped all that they needed to see and know. The message is the same for you. You have seen enough. Through the witness of the 11 and countless faithful witnesses since, and personally and directly in the waters of baptism that made you a living witness, you have seen the crucifixion, resurrection, and ascension of Jesus. You know this reality, and you know that you don't need to stare off into the heavens to find Jesus. You know where to find him. He's here, at this altar, here, in this bread, here, in this wine. He's here for you and in you. Contemplate that vision. Marvel at that wonder. And then go. Be his witness. Amen. We stand for the hymn.